Live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3834 of the Survival Podcast. I've got a special guest coming on named Zach Smith. If that sounds familiar to you, it's not just because Smith's a common name and so is Zach. It's because he was on the air with us a little less than 2 years ago. He is a pioneering, engineering, innovating farmer, also an entrepreneur, who has put together systems that allow us to rotate our livestock through fields, through pastures, or even right in between rows of row cropping. We had him on last time talking about stock cropper. Today we're going to focus more on something called the cluster cluck. I just love that term. And all the work that he's been doing in these last 2 years to make this into a reality. Imagine if you can. What if I told you, Neo, that your chicken tractor could move itself? What if it could be pre-programmed to do that in a straight line situation and do it for, I don't know, a week before you had to change where it was going? What if you could move it whenever you wanted to with a click of your cell phone with a Bluetooth enabled app and other things that that might make you think that you could do? What if you could automate true protein production and do so in a regenerative agricultural way? That all sounds like a big thing to say you can do. I'm here to tell you, Zach has a way to show you how to do just that. Last time I had him on, we were just kind of getting started with that. And somebody's asked, how do we watch at 1.5 speed? You don't. Not in a live stream. That doesn't work. That's not how time works. But you're welcome to come back when it's not live and speed me up if you think you need to. Anyway, we'll have Zach on in just a moment to catch us up with the work that he's doing and let you know what's coming next. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day, though. Sponsor of the day number one today is KnifeKits.com, a company that does what it says and says what it does right there in the name. They make kits where anybody can make a knife, even somebody like me, and make it really awesome. You can pick out a kit and pick out like your blade format and things like that. Pick out some pins and some handle material and put it all together. If you need some help, they have books and videos and things that help you figure out how to do that. If you're experienced, then you're more of like a master bladesmith. They also have stuff you just can't find anywhere else. They have mammoth tusk that you can make your handle, buffalo horn, and elk bone and things like that as well. They also have all the stuff you need to make sheaths and holsters, whether leather or kydex and a bunch of other stuff. And they've been a sponsor of the show, get this, guys, since 2010. Is that insane? It's 2026. We have a sponsor since 2010. That is KnifeKits.com. Check them out. And if you're an MSB member, they also give you a discount when you make purchases. You can find that in the benefits section of your MSB. Next up today, Start9 Sovereign Computing. They ain't been around that long, not as long as KnifeKits, but they have been a sponsor of the show since before there was a thing called COVID. That is quite a while. That is a sovereign computing platform where you can put a little server right in your own home and you can access your files and your applications from anywhere in the world completely encrypted over Tor. You can run your own Bitcoin node. You can run your own Lightning node. You can run your own encrypted end-to-end military-level encrypted messaging services and a ton of other stuff. And if this all sounds a little too Jason Bourne and high-tech for you, don't worry about it. If you can install apps on a smartphone and use them, which I'm sure you can, you're probably using an app on your smartphone right now to listen to or watch this, then you can run a Start9 server and do all the cool things with it. And they also have great support to help you get started. Check them out. And they do a discount for MSB, 9%, which on their more expensive server will pay for several years of your membership all by itself. Check them out today at start9.com. With that, let me bring our special guest on, Zach Smith. Hey, Zach, man, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm really, really excited to be here again.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. I think it was a good hit from both sides last time you were here. There was a lot of interest in what you're doing. Before we dig into the stock cropper and the cluster cluck and what those do for people, can you give us a little bit about your background? Like when you were in high school, did you know you were going to be a farmer as a multi-generational thing, or did you go do something else first? How did you end up, you know, doing one of the less appreciated, harder jobs in the world?
Yeah, no, I wanted to be a farmer when I was in high school, but I was the oldest of five kids, and my younger brother was born when I was a junior in high school, so I was going to have to wait a long time for my parents to get the brood through the nest, so to speak. And so I went off and I got a degree in agronomy from Iowa State University, and then proceeded, I just figured I would work in big ag. That was where my career kind of started off. And essentially, for the most part, that's what I did until my brother got to be old enough, or he was close to graduation. My parents decided to retire, and that gave an opening, along with the ethanol boom that happened. That was kind of the economic engine that gave a spark to make me want to get into this corn and soybean game, I guess, at that point in 2013. And started farming then, and then continued to work on the side. And then about 4 years ago, I had the opportunity to pick up enough land where I could farm full time. I'd also started stock cropper at the same time. So, that was kind of my quick path to where I'm at today. I'm really happy not to be employed by anybody and be self-employed and to be doing my own stuff with my own farm and working with stock cropper. I'm really, really lucky. So
I think the reality is, once you experience that level of freedom, it's hard to ever go back to working for somebody. Yeah. I don't anymore, but when I first started, and I was already a company owner before I did this, but I was employed by my own company, so I still had kind of that employee containment system. And when I first started doing this, occasionally I would wake up from a dream where I had a job, and I was terrified that I had, like, what went so wrong that I now go back to an office or a cubicle or something like that? So I can imagine that it is very liberating for you to spend most of your days outside and doing things like producing food and working with animals. Let's talk about the stock cropper and what's gone on for the last 2 years since I had you on. But let's not assume that anybody listening today heard that. So start out with, okay, what is the stock cropper? What does it do? And then what does the last couple of years of its development look like?
Yeah. So the stock cropper was invented kind of as a response to the corn and soybean complex that we have here in Iowa, which is not a hamster wheel race to the bottom type production system. And in 2020, a couple other farming buddies and I had the audacity to dream what a different production system that could look like. That would be, it wasn't necessarily the idea to be more regenerative, but it was initially, but it became that. We had the idea of trying to figure out how to integrate livestock back inside of a cornfield and create kind of a perfect rotational system where we could have strips of pasture and strips of corn that we could feed to the animals and basically move animals through the strips of pasture next to the corn and kind of create this, system where we'd be growing corn as well as livestock in the field. And in order to do that, we had to create the world's first three-ring animal circus on wheels that we called the Cluster Cluck 5000. That was the original prototype. So it's essentially a mobile grazing barn unit that would house sheep and goats in the front, pigs in the middle, and then chickens in the rear. So we have four different types of livestock kind of parading through a cornfield. We'd move the contraption a couple times a day. The first year was with solar powered and winch action. We really didn't know if it was going to work or not, but it really worked well, and we caught a lot of attention. Ended up 2 years ago, when I was here last, I just got done premiering in the movie Food Inc. 2, which our story was featured in, and we've had a lot of accolades ever since then with kind of the pursuit of this thing. And so 2 years ago, when I was here last, we had come out with this version you have on the screen right here. This is the Cluster Cluck Pico. This was our backyard chicken tractor. And we really had pivoted away from the developing the field system of stock cropping more to, because of the limitations of getting into that market, versus how could we take the technology that we developed in this process and then actually apply it to a market that does exist, which is the protein sovereignty market. And so that was really the focus. And so 2 years ago when I was on here, we had just come out with the first version of the Pico. We had reservations on that. We were intending in 2024 into 25 of having our first production run. But I, like a lot of startups, I got hit with an absolute curveball. My partner in engineering and manufacturing was going through a divorce, unfortunately, and that pretty much shanghaied my progress for about a year and a half. And then he ended up walking away from us a year ago about at this time. And so a year ago, I was basically dead in the water, and it sucked because you know, when I did your podcast, I mean, we got a ton of RSVPs and traction out of this audience. And that's why I'm excited to be back and happy to explain kind of what has gone on and why we haven't been able to execute on that. But that was essentially the reason. The good news is that I'm stronger than ever now. After that happened, I was able to find a new mechanical and electrical engineer, as well as a strategic investment operating partner that's come on board with a ton of experience to help me try to get through the venture capital process. And the most important thing is we've got a new product that's essentially will be what we will come to market first with instead of the Pico. This will be that you alluded to in the intro, a drive unit that you could attach to your existing chicken tractor to make it autonomous, to take the daily chorin or the daily movement task out of it. If you don't want to go out and have to move it by yourself, you can have the thing move autonomously and be solar powered. So that's kind of in a nuts and bolts, kind of stock cropper where we started big field scale stuff. Now we're really honing in on protein sovereignty. It's going to be led with what we call the cluster cluck drive. And then we still intend on making the Pico, but it will be probably in another year that we'll come to production with that. So,
gotcha, man. So what was it like being featured in Fooding 2? I know that was kind of a big deal for you, and that did kind of really coincide with about the same time you were here.
Yeah, it was a really interesting experience. You know, it went on for a long time. They started filming us in first COVID year in the fall of 2020, actually. And we were filmed for 2.5 years, which was a really interesting process to be in. You know, when you sign off on participating in something like that, you lose all editorial rights. So you just really don't know how you're going to be framed. And I was really careful about that, but I was really happy with how our part of the film turned out. And actually the whole film I thought was great. I thought they did a really nice job with it. And we ended up having a pretty significant storyline. I think out of the 94 minutes, I think we had 11 or 12 that were featured on our story, which was one of the highest concentration of any single story. So, you know, it opened up doors. I mean, we've got people that have seen us now all over the country and all over the world with what we're doing. And definitely has drawn interest and a nice trickle of people wanting to, be interested in what we're doing and then start and to buy the products as well. So
I would imagine that led to some, like, interesting speaking engagements and things like that after you were in that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, especially the first year afterwards, there was a lot of neat opportunities and lots of podcast appearances, and it was a hoot, you know. And the really neat thing was being able to go to, you know, some of the, I got selected to represent the film at the Telluride Film Festival and then at the premiere in Washington DC about 2 years ago right now, and got to go to the red carpet, and, you know, I showed up as a farmer waiting in line with everyone else, and then they whisked me away into the VIP room, and there's all these celebrities, Morgan Freeman and Mark Cuban and Chris Tucker and just a whole bunch of folks, and so I'm drinking Heinekens with the elites, so it was a pretty wild experience.
Cool. Let's talk about what the cluster cluck actually is now. What is it really all about? What does it do for people? How does it work? What are they getting if they order one and what have you?
Yeah. So the new product that we're coming to market with, this one, we have a beta test that, we've got all of our units placed for 2026 here. And then our first production run will be in 2027. We'll have a limited production run. It will be a drive unit that, if you have, like, say, a Joel Saladin chicken tractor or any type of wooden chicken tractor, or it doesn't even have to be chickens. You could have, it could be a pen that you could move hogs or sheep or bottle calves around with, anything that weighs up to 600 pounds that you could have wheels on the back. You would be able to attach our device to the front of your pen. And what the device is simply, a solar powered, electric screw jack. So it has a jack that will raise the pen up off the ground before it moves. And then it's got a drive wheel system that once the barn is raised and the weight is transferred from the barn to the wheels, and it's got, you know, good traction, the barn will kick itself into gear and roll itself ahead, you know, however many feet that you tell it that you want it to move. And then it'll set itself back down and be ready for the next movement here. So
And that's the item I have on the screen right now, correct?
That's correct. That is the Cluck Drive. So it's really nice and compact. It's going to weigh about 60 to 65 pounds, I think. And we've made it incredibly simple. The idea is that we wanted to make it so that it was, you know, It does not steer itself, so the idea with it is that you get it locked into a path that you want to have it drive itself in, and it will continue on that path until you actually can enter into the app that if you want to have it like only go 200 feet because you're going to hit a tree line or something like that. Okay. It'll stop prior to that distance and give you time to come out and manually turn it around. And when I'm saying manually, I'm saying, you know, use a key fob to drive the thing while you're turning the contraption. And
but you still have so power. You're providing the power of changing the direction, and it's still moving the actual thing for you. So somebody that might struggle to move their tractor would still be able to do it. You're just kind of edging over the front type of situation.
100%. And that's the thing, like, you know, whenever, like, I'm a farmer, and so, like, a lot of times I leave early in the morning to be in the field, you know, and it's still dark. And so I don't, last thing I want to do is go out and move my chicken tractor. So if I send my wife out to do it, you know, and she has to yank the thing, she's not happy with me either. So I wanted to make it so that it was easy for my wife to be able to go out, and it wasn't a hassle. And I didn't piss her off when I called her to say, hey, I didn't move it. Can you move it for me? It was kind of a husband survival tactic, right? But there's a lot of people. So one of the fun stories is that, you know, you asked about movie connections. This strategic advisor guy that is now working with me, he actually saw Food Inc. 2 on a flight to Singapore. And this guy is an ex-hedge fund guy from Wall Street. But he wanted what I had, and he reached out to me, wanted to be a part of Stockcropper because his mom had one of these, you know, chicken tractors that she struggled to move, and she always had to have somebody stronger than her around to help move it. And so he's like, this guy has exactly what my mom needs. And so he called and he's like, number one, I want what you have, and I'm interested in investing and actually joining the team, because I think this is going to be an expanding space in the future. And so, that's another connection to what we're doing. So,
let's talk a little bit about this new product and how it differs from what you kind of were doing. One way I see this is that it's a much smaller product. Like, the person's actually creating their own containment system, which is the bulky part, the heavy part. Not just the expensive part from a standpoint of materials, because it's not that expensive for materials for most of these things, but to ship. Like, one of the things that I saw as kind of an issue when you were on the first time is, how much does it cost to get one of these things from point A to point B? Now you have consolidated down to the intelligence and the working component that does the labor. And then somebody else kind of plugs that into this large bulky part that's, again, material wise less expensive, but the cost of moving, you know, even a relatively small tractor, like a 4-foot by 8-foot, anything across the country is extreme.
Yeah. And that was exactly, you know, the frustrations I was having and getting somewhat feedback from investors is like, how are you going to pull this off? Your transportation costs are going to kill you. And actually the pivot moment came last summer. I actually took the Pico, the big barn, to basically like a town festival that had a couple thousand people coming through here in Iowa. And I had a lot of folks stop in and they said, man, we love this Pico thing. It's awesome. I'd love to have this in my yard. And he's like, but you know, I already have a chicken coop and, you know, it would be nice if I had something I could just hook that drive to my chicken coop. And then I heard that about 25 times that day from people. And I'm like, okay,
yeah, maybe I need to listen to this.
This is a signal from the universe. And So then we pivoted last August and we committed. We're like, we are just going to focus, because the drive unit that we had on the Pico was okay, but it wasn't what it needed to be. And so I'm like, you know what? This is going to be way cheaper to get to market, to actually get us to revenue. And it opens up the potential market for what we can sell into, because not everybody can afford, you know, a $8,000-$10,000 chicken tractor, right? So that was a pretty small demographic. Now we're going to have this thing where we can completely open it up. And a lot of people in the homesteading space, they're DIY folks. They like to build their own thing.
Yeah.
And so this, our idea was, is like, let's do the stuff that would be technically hard for them to do, and then let them do or let them design whatever they want. And yeah. we're just gonna give them the autonomy piece. And it's a lot easier for me to get excited over as an entrepreneur. It's a lot lower hill to climb.
Yeah, definitely.
And really empower a lot of people to do what I love, which is growing your own meat. So.
And you're right. I mean, you're taking the complex thing. How do I make this mechanical thing with built-in intelligence that works with a key fob, you know, and you're taking that on and designing that as a farmer that understands what it needs to do. And then basically what the customer is left with is build some form of a containment box. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. We can build a really fancy one that's for egg-laying chickens that go up at night into a coop-like area and lay in a box. We can build a box that just is a very utilitarian box that has, you know, ventilation and some shade and all for a meat run. Or, yep. like you said, you can even build something that is for larger animals. But the point is, in the end, you're building a box. Right. What's harder to build, a car or a flat thing to drive it on? Well, the car is more complex as a machine. We can build roads. We can build roads with a bulldozer and nothing else. They won't last as long as if we pave them and do it all right. But putting a road in is pretty simple. Making a box and putting some sort of caging around it is not complicated. I remember when I built my first chicken tractor, it ended up being way too heavy for what it was. It was 4 foot by 8, dimensional lumber, and hardware cloth, and a nail gun, and about 15 minutes in a beer.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't that. Now, moving it, I really wish I would have had this. You know, because you do it the way I just described, you end up with something that's not that big a footprint, pretty damn heavy and complicated to move. And my wife couldn't move it at all.
Yeah.
That just wasn't going to happen, you know. And so now you're taking and you're offloading the bulk and the ease of the easy part of construction to the customer, who then has, and I think this is something you kind of hit on, but I think we should talk more about this, complete customization on their end. They can have this very simple meat chicken tractor, a Salatin style, a Darby Simpson style, whatever, or they can have like the chicken Taj Mahal. It's up to them what they want to build.
Right. Yeah. And so our plan is still, once we get the drive unit up and running, our plan is still to bring the Pico for those. Because we had a ton of RSVPs for people that wanted that. But it's kind of a first principles approach. We needed the drive unit to make the Pico good anyway. So we're going to perfect this, get lots of good feedback from people, and then just sell a ton of them and then expand outward in this kind of protein sovereignty lane. So.
What is your target price? I mean, I know that this is still like you're doing a beta and then you're going into production, limited production in 27. So there could be variables in there. But I mean, what are you trying to come to market at with the cluster clug drive?
Yeah, so it'll depend on the level of technology that we end up in the final version. And we could have some different layers to that. So what I mean is you could have a version of the barn that would not be autonomous, kind of similar to like how Tesla does their autonomy package type of deal, where you would just go out and be able to move it with a key fob. So you wouldn't have to crank on it or anything. You would just have a button to go out and you know, still be present to do it. But if you wanted the autonomy package, that would maybe be a little bit more expensive. So we're hoping, I mean, right now, you know, we're making around 15 units for beta test. So, you know, we're still a ways off on getting true scalable production cost of goods. But I'm hoping right now that we're going to be able to sell these things out the door when it comes down to it for 2027, somewhere between $2,000 to $2,500
a piece. So. Okay. And like you said, that'll move up to a 600-pound
correct thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, a Saladin tractor, you know, depending on the gauge of steel you put on top, is going to weigh usually somewhere between 200 to 300 pounds. So we've got plenty of capacity there. But, you know, if you wanted to create a, you know, a hog pen or something that was 12 foot by 12 foot, this thing would be capable of making that work. So
cool. Like you said, basically it needs to have wheels on the backside. So that I guess the way the drive works is kind of like a little mini forklift, kind of lifts it up a little bit, pulls it forward and sets it down. That's kind of the whole thing.
Yeah. And the other thing that we've done that's really cool that we'll have as accessories to the drive for people that want it is that we've come up with something that we call the chicken fluffer.
Okay.
Which is a device that spins, you'll put into the back of your chicken tractor so that when it's time to move, it'll kick into gear and scare the chickens away because meat birds are usually pretty stupid. And
yeah,
so,
instead of,
so if you're moving autonomously or you're not paying attention, it's easy to run them over. So we wanted to have a device that would scare them to avoid, you know, disemboweling chickens on your yard. So we've got that part automated as well and built into our software to kick that on first and then move the barn. And then the other thing that's really cool that we've done is that I'm really proud about that we'll have as an option is an automated predator apron system. So in areas where you've got tunneling predators that will come up if your ground is undulating or you don't have, you know, a flat surface where it sets itself down, we'll have an apron, a steel apron kit that will be able to raise and lower itself as the jack raises and lowers. We've designed a pivot system to basically fold the aprons up so they don't get caught on grass or, you know, anything on the ground. And then when the barn moves itself ahead, it sits itself down and you're predator proof again. So we've, you know, I've been growing chickens for 30 years and I've tried to design this to remove all of the pain points that I've ever suffered and sworn at through that experience. And I think we're pretty close on this one, and I'm really excited for people to get their hands on it. So,
yeah, that is a strong indicator of a person that knows their market, knows their subject, and takes signal feedback, because those are actually the two questions I was about to ask you on not running them over and protecting them, because in doing that here, like what I ended up doing is once I realized that I needed to get them to come with me, I would start, like, I would whistle every time I moved them. And then they got real quick to where they're like, oh, whistle means new stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they would all run to my side. And that was the same effect as scaring them away. But then the other thing was, and I'm very flat, my property, and I would still get in certain places, especially when I was doing meat birds and they were younger. They, not only am I worried about something getting in, I was worried about them getting out.
Yeah.
So by having some form of apron plus having kind of the chicken car wash machine, basically, is what it sounds mm-hmm. like. One of the big things that come over your car, cleans it off, basically just feather dust their little butts forward. I think that is very smart. I was thinking like an alarm or something, like ding, 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 and that means it's about to happen. But the problem with that is you're going to kill a few before everybody else figures it out. Your method is fairly foolproof, I guess.
Yeah, it works. They get startled by it really quick, and they get up and move ahead. So, and you know, and the barn is moving really, really slow too. So, like, I think we're moving. It takes us about, if you have like a 10-foot long barn, it takes us about 40 to 45 seconds to move 10 feet. Is like the time of a move. So, we're giving them plenty of time to get out of the way, I should say.
Got you. Can you talk a little bit about why you moved over to kind of more of like focusing on the protein sovereignty? Because when you were building the original stock cropper, the whole idea was you take a corn and bean farmer like yourself, you leave, you know, these rows in, so you have a row of corn and then a row of cover crop and then a row of corn. And of course, then you run these things with maybe pigs on one side and chickens on the other or something like that down these rows. And then you increase the overall yield of the farm because now the farm is producing, you know, this incredible pastured protein. Plus you're still making corn or beans or corn and beans or what have you. I think the uphill part of that battle though is like Joel Salatin will often say like the average farmer is 66 years old and doesn't want to do anything any different. And then you look at the government, how roped in people are. So it seemed like there was a lot of headwinds there, even though it was a great idea.
Yeah, and the government stuff was definitely part of it. The biggest obstacle and why, you know, so when we got into this in 2020, the world was completely going to hell, right? We aligned when we started building this with COVID. And so the first year we were building it, like we were euthanizing hogs across all of Iowa and in the Midwest because the supply chain had completely broke down. And there was all this talk of a reset of like the meat production system and how fragile it was. And so the first couple of years we were like thinking, hey, this is going to do something because people are going to respond to COVID. Well, that happened for about a year and then that went away. And when that went away, when we saw that, because if for the people that don't understand, like most of like the pigs and chickens that are raised here in Iowa, they are all vertically integrated. The farmer never owns them. The farmer is just simply the caretaker and then usually gets the manure and they own the barn. So it's not like how it was when I was raising pigs when I was growing up. And so in order to have a market, you have to be tied to one of those integrators. And so without an overhaul of the meat production system or breaking up the, you know, the big four meat suppliers, there wasn't a path for the stock cropping system to scale. Now, the one thing I will share with you that's different when I was here last time. So we actually got the system itself installed in or put into practice on one of the most prestigious agronomy research farms in the country in central Illinois, in the heart of the Corn Belt, called Precision Planting. And they put our system, along with one of our cluster clucks, up against everything else in agriculture, like all the latest and greatest doodads that all the big companies have sold. And they evaluate yield and profitability on their farm. And so the last two seasons, stock cropper has shattered the all-time corn yield production production records after the barn ran the previous year. So we've yielded 435 bushel corn in 2024 and 426 bushel corn in 2025. Previous record was like 400 or a little over 400. And we have the most profitable system of anything as far as ROI back to the farmer with the system as well. And so it's there like on the shelf waiting. You know, if things change, if there is this upheaval that happens, we're still super proud of what we did because we created a system that could bring a lot more biodiversity back to the landscape and give more opportunities for farmers not to have to farm 16 million acres. They could farm 160 again. Yeah. and feed their family and have a community. That was the original goal of the project. It's just, we've taken from what we learned of moving animals through a field, and like now this protein sovereignty thing is kind of the focus. And it's still a really powerful thing because, you know, when you look at what's happening with AI and the state of the world right now, and anytime the world goes to shit, people go and buy chickens. Like what happened during COVID, it happened last year with the bird flu when eggs were $12 a dozen, you know. And so I don't think we're wrong in betting on this trend. And I know your audience here, you know, believes this, through and through, and a lot of them are already living it. But I think there's more people that are going to be searching for meaning and having a hedge against an unstable supply chain in a shaky world for sure.
So. I think the other group that you can really market to, and they're definitely part of my community and many others like it, is a community that does this. They go out and they get the chickens and they plant the garden and they do all the stuff and they like it. And then, you know, their brother-in-law gets a deal on a cruise that's a three-day cruise, and they can take a Friday and a Monday off and with their PTO and go on this cruise and last minute, and it seems like a great idea. And they go, yeah, he's going to take care of all this stuff while we're gone. And most of it is pretty easy to figure out how to automate. You put timers on your irrigation for your garden, and, you know, you can easily leave for 4 days and things like that. You can hire a dog sitter to come let the dog out in the morning and the evening or something like that, and you're good to go. Finding someone to take care of your chickens or your pigs or your goats or something, I can tell you, is you know, with my duck operation, it's complicated. It's a unique skill set to know how to handle things like that. If I can leave for a long weekend and my birds are in a perfectly protected environment, and I know I have enough ahead of them that they can move once or twice a day for that to happen with automation, I can take my brother-in-law up on the great deal he found, and I can run down to Galveston and jump on a ship for 3 or 4 days. And I'm not obsessed with cruising. That's just an example. Like something comes up, you want to go somewhere, and you find out real quickly that animals tie you to the land if you do not create systems of automation for them. So I think that's a huge market, too, is people that have, you know, a little bit of upward mobility and they want to maximize that, but they also want to be able to produce food on their own yard. And I think that's probably a big portion of the type of customer base you'll find as well.
Well, I think you're 100% right. And then those people are not in the current market right now. And for those reasons, like, because you have to be there all the time. And so if our product gives people that lifestyle flexibility where they can still go to the lake, I think I think it's really exciting what this could do for the amount of people that participate in growing their own protein. So
awesome. Why do you think the time is now for protein sovereignty on the larger side? Like if somebody does it with, obviously, sorry, don't get any protein on your property until 2027 when you can buy one of these, right? So from more of a, just a broader standpoint, why do you think people need to be taking this path toward protein sovereignty?
Well, for all the reasons I just talked about, I think, you know, the trends over the last couple of years of distrust of like these big systems, distrust in the food system. You know, you have the rise of things like the MAHA movement where, you know, protein is back. Now the food pyramid's flipped, you know, and I think there's a lot of people. When you look at what's happening with AI and technology, like people are looking for an off ramp, in my opinion, just to have real things. And that's been I've been really lucky to introduce friends from cities that have come out and done butchering with me or experience or see what I'm doing with stock cropper. And they're absolutely fascinated with it. And they want to be, they don't know a lot about it, but they sense that it's something real and they want to be a part of it. And it's a really powerful thing. And, you know, until people experience it, I don't know how to describe it other than that. But I don't see the world becoming less volatile. And I see people wanting to be able to, you know, take care of themselves more or have that optionality. And then I think it's and if the world doesn't go to pot, you know, just the satisfaction of being able to feed yourself and what that means. I mean, I've got kids now that are fully grown and they're better human beings because they grew up butchering chickens and pigs and having that experience. And when they, you know, when they go to interviews now, you know, for jobs, like tell us something interesting about you. Well, you know, they can go into the whole thing and there's not a lot of other people that have, you know, those shared experiences. So, the data shows that this is happening. When you look at like sales of chicks and backyard chickens, I mean, it's like a 13 to 15% compound annual growth rate on just that market alone. I don't see this slowing down anytime soon. So
I think with protein in particular too, like there's a cost reality coming to this. Like when I started doing this back in 2008, when I would talk about this subject, I would say, you're not really doing it to save money. You're doing it to eat a better quality product. Right. And because if you were willing to eat a CAFO produced piece of meat or, a giant chicken house egg, there was no way that a small producer was going to save money, but they were making a much better product. I don't consider that to be true anymore. Every time I go to a market or something and I look at something like bottom round and it says like $8.99 a pound, I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. Like my brain has not caught up with that. I did a pretty good job with my mind accepting inflation for about 25 years of adulthood. And then what happened in the last 5 to 6 years has scrambled any, I feel like, you know, like my granddad that used to think that 50 cents was a good amount of money to give a kid to go play with, right? Like I can buy a candy bar is 1985, you know, like you should be able to be good for a couple of days. I feel like that old codger now, but I'm not thinking back to 1980. I'm thinking back to 2020 and what a piece of brisket cost.
Right.
I remember brisket going on sale for, you know, $1.47 a pound or something like that. We're now taking the cheap cuts of meat cost what, you know, strip steak cost 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The cheapest, crappiest ground meat, 80-20, is $8 a pound at the grocery store.
Right.
So there's now a financial case to make this. And what I think is interesting is if you look at the premium on like organic beef versus conventional beef, it's not that big anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be 25-30%. When I looked at just comparable product at the grocery store last time I went, it was more in the neighborhood of 5% to 10%.
Yep.
And that's because the organic stuff hasn't gone parabolic like the conventional stuff has.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other thing I would say too is, you know, for people looking for protein, I mean, there is such a big gap between the price of beef and some of the cheaper meats like pork and chicken. I think just from an economic standpoint, I think, you know, some people will migrate there. And I had somebody else bring something up interesting to me that I wasn't, that I hadn't thought about, I guess. But with the rise of GLP-1s, that changes the type of protein that people can eat as well. And they're looking for really lean stuff. And that really leans to chicken specifically. And we know how many people have, you know, or what that market's done over the last, you know, couple of years. So, you know, I think there's a couple different trends that are kind of converging in here. And I'm just really excited to be a part of it. Like I said, I've been doing this myself for, you know, 15 years, and now it's just finally becoming in vogue, and it's fun to have a product that I think is going to make people give more people the opportunity that I've had. And that makes me really happy. So.
Yeah, definitely. What about how you're raising capital for this? Like how are you doing your campaign for capital raise, and what are your goals along with it so that you can actually take this from now proven concept to actually marketable product?
Yeah. So because of SEC rules, I really can't talk about that openly on podcasts, other than I can say that we are in the process of trying to do a round at this point. The goal of raising the capital would be for just being able to have, I mean, it's very, very expensive, even with something small like this, to scale up and do production, and the cost of goods and all the things it takes to like get to that point. It takes a significant amount. And then especially if we're going to try to do the Pico at the same time. So, you know, that's what the funds that we're raising are basically going to finish engineering on the drive, and then, as well, scale up for Pico production as well after that in 2028. So
what is your thought on the Pico? Because that's the one where you're getting the whole system. You're getting the box and the drive together. Do you still see that as being something you're going to be able to move a significant amount of? Do you see that maybe being sales that are closer to the point of manufacturing? How do you see, or maybe more commercial oriented, like small scale commercial or something?
Yeah, no, I think the Pico will be for people that just want to have something that shows up, and they're going to be willing to pay the price that it takes to do that. They want to have, you know, the thing about the Pico is I designed that to be a no pain chicken tractor. So it's all chorable from the outside. There's no entering it to feed water. Everything is done from the outside. Egg collection. It'll have all the same technology with the drive, with the chicken fluffer will be built in. It'll come with a predator apron. And it's something that looks really handsome. I mean, you saw the pictures, you know, when it sits in your yard. It doesn't look like a Joel Saladin thing that has wood that's, you know, slowly fading with time. It's meant to be a handsome piece of equipment that can be on a nice rural property that looks well and performs well. So the biggest challenge we have, yeah, there you go right there, is getting the design engineering for manufacturing part figured out, where we can make this a simpler thing to be able to ship in like a panel type assembly where it's easy to bolt together on site. I don't think it'll be economic with the cost of trucking, especially with what diesel's doing right now, to only put like four or five of these on a semi trailer and ship across the country. I don't think that's going to work. So it's mainly a design engineering to basically get it in a shippable package and reduce our part count. The first one, you know, it was a great prototype, but there was no way in that current form that was going to be scalable. So
yeah,
that's really the barrier. I think there's a path to it. We just have to have the capital to be able to afford those engineering services to get us there. So
very cool, man. And you're a Bitcoiner, right? I mean, you look at the shirt you got on. That tells us something right there. Satoshi Farms, right? What role does Bitcoin play in all this, or is it just like a lot of us, you're also a Bitcoiner?
For now, I'm also a Bitcoiner. Okay. But I very much would like, as we get going here, to we talked about it, I think, last time. I'd love to be able to take payment of it. And actually, yesterday I'm in the process of getting the blockchain. I got my node for the first time here yesterday, and so that's a new step for me with it. But yeah, the idea is for, you know, and I know for this community and a lot of others, it's becoming a lot more relevant, especially in the last 2 years since we talked. And yeah, we'd love to be able to take payment for ClusterClux with Bitcoin. So
yeah, I talked to a lot of entrepreneurs, and when we talk about taking Bitcoin, I think some of them are kind of afraid of too much success, in that when you run a business of any kind and you're paying your bills for the business and outside of the business with it, you need a certain amount of cash flow to do that with.
Right.
And so they're afraid that if too many people use Bitcoin, then I have to convert and what have you. Man, if you get over 5% in any place, unless you are selling Bitcoin stuff to Bitcoin people, you've hit a home run.
Yeah.
You know, I accept Bitcoin for membership and I get about 5%.
Sure.
And it's great because it's a low enough relative to the total gross revenue that
right.
it goes into the forever stack, right?
Right.
Like saving at least that much for retirement anyway. Now it's already there and I don't have to do it. And so,
that's exactly the way I see it probably happening in reality.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, a lot of people don't want to let go of that Bitcoin. I don't blame them, right? You know, I can have space dollars, you know, Federation credits, or I can have real money. I want the real money, you know.
Right.
But if somebody wants to spend it, I always want to create that on ramp for them. We do that too, like our workshops that we do here on our little mini farm every year in November. I will not take Bitcoin for the deposit, because the deposit is so I can buy all the stuff that I have to feed right. and give to everybody when they get here. But I'll take the balance due when they get here in Bitcoin. And I probably get, out of 50 people, I probably get about 5, so about 10% to pay that balance
sure.
in Bitcoin. And again, it just goes straight into the long-term stack. And it's part of the overriding personal economic plan. And I think there's a lot of value to that from a standpoint. And it also, I think it encourages the adoption of Bitcoin. Just the fact that somebody reads, accept Bitcoin, goes, huh, maybe it's not just a thing like the TV says that's a Ponzi scheme backed by Ether, you know?
Right.
Because most people that have a negative view of it, they don't know anything. You know,
right.
I seldom say that somebody doesn't know anything about something, but in the case of that, I will, because as soon as they start talking about it, you're like, yeah, no, that's... There's not a, I'm sorry, not one word of that was correct. You know?
It's interesting though, since last time I was on, like even within agriculture, it has shifted substantially, at least, you know, the curiosity people have. And one of the other guys that you had on, my buddy Vance Crowe, the Crowe podcast, he's been a big proponent, and he's actually getting paid now by a lot of, some of these big ag organizations to have him come in and speak and talk specifically about Bitcoin and start to explain it to people in the agricultural industry that are now, you know, kind of starting to wake up and be interested in, something other than maybe farmland for a stable hold of value or something like that. So,
yeah. You know, the problem is we all have leaking batteries, you know, and I'm all about real estate too. And farmland is just one form of real estate. But real estate comes with this thing called taxation just for it sitting there. And it has maintenance and upkeep just so they can sit
right.
there. If it's farmland, you better be farming it or leasing it to somebody who's farming it. If it's a house, you better be living it or renting it to somebody. And, you know, it can be monthly rental or it can be vacation rental. But some way you have to maintain and pay for, where Bitcoin is a great battery that you can just put on the shelf and it doesn't leak.
Right.
That's kind of the way I describe it. It does it go down, you know, tomorrow? Sure. What's it do over 10 years? We all know the answer to that. And it just,
right.
every time I look at it, I just think, I wish I had more. I mean, how do you see like that whole, you know, the Bitcoin space, the homesteading space, and this term sovereignty? I think that's becoming more and more important to one group of people and less and less important to another group of people that I really don't want to hang out with much.
Yeah, I think that's, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I think I get the sense from in the circles that I run and the conversations I have that the sovereignty space in general has a long way to go. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there just with what we've talked about earlier, just the uncertainty of the world. And like, you know, one of the other, you know, things is like everyone left the farm to go to the city to do the important work because they weren't needed on the farm anymore. And now we have this thing called AI that is going to, that's already displacing. You look at the work, the layoffs that a lot of these huge corporations have had in the last 6 months. I mean, it's unbelievable. And and what the projections are of the next 5 years of what that's going to do. I mean, you know, we could be talking 20-30% unemployment. Like, people are going to need to have meaningful things to do rather than just sit on Facebook, right? And so I think, you know, if you have more time, and who knows what's going to happen, if it's going to be some sort of, you know, UBI or, you know, some sort of dividend that comes back from the oligarchs that control all of it. But I think people are going to want to have something to, you know, we left the farms to go to the cities. I see people coming back from the cities to the farms or figuring out how to, you know, there's nothing more meaningful than having a garden, you know, or raising your own stuff. And I think we've gotten to be in such like a hollowed out digital existence over the last 10 to 15 years. And I think people are just ready for real shit again, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see it in spaces that are adjacent, but not all the way there. But just the interest that I see in young people to learn basic skills like how to cook.
Right.
Tells me that we went too far and that we're running up against kind of a barrier where a kid realized, well, I can't live on DoorDash and restaurants alone. Like, I can't afford to do this anymore. And therefore, hey, you know, I hear back in the olden days when people were hungry, they went in their refrigerator and took food out and used an oven or a stove and cooked it. And then they actually ate it at home and they didn't pay somebody else to do that for them. Maybe I should figure out how to do that.
Right.
And to me, that's really foreign because I grew up, you know, if you got a hole in a pair of socks, my grandmother would, it's called darning. She'd sew the hole up on unless it was something that couldn't be fixed. And we ended up in a world where that concept alone is just like, why would you do that? That's gross. I mean, it's a sock. By the time there's a hole in it, why didn't you throw it away? Let alone like cook your own food or raise your own animals for food. But that seems to have taken a huge turn over the last, I would say, 15-ish years is where I've seen just more and more people gravitating that way. And I think you're right. I think like something high-tech like AI, you think would lead to this fully technological landscape. And I think that you could have both.
Right.
You know, eventually you can probably build artificial intelligence into your product line.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
To where it will know where to go. Like,
right.
Maybe it'll, like, have some kind of sensors on the land and say, hey, today I need to go over there or what have you. I mean, that's a long way out, but, I mean, what you're building with a few modifications could move that direction pretty quick.
Yeah, and that's we've already kind of designed for that, for the ability to expand into those arenas. You know, it still has to make sense financially. That's why, like, with what we've come with, we've tried to do the most stripped down version that solves the biggest problem, which is either the physical strain of movement or the physical presence, you know, and we're just going to do that really well first. And then if people want the other things, if they want AI, if they want camera systems on, you know, if they're willing to pay for the complexity and the extra technology, then so be it. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think one of your hangups with the larger stuff, the stuff that would run in between the row cropping, is that I look at each drive system, not so much the stock cropper box, but the drive system, kind of like a tractor. Like a farmer doesn't buy an actual tractor, like front end loader, PTO, all that tractor. Farmer doesn't buy 10 tractors for 10 lanes. They go lane to lane. And that system seems like if there could be some way that drive system could leave and go move each one, now I'm getting maximum bang for the buck out of it or what have you. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about being a teenager and walking some cornfields for pheasants and the length you walk to flush those roosters out of the final, because that's what they keep running ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then do that enough, you know, how many times? And even 160-acre square, like you mentioned, you could easily, if you were row cropping that, support more than one of those stock croppers, you know, for the whole thing. You wouldn't have to graze 80 acres basically with one of them, right?
If you had 160 acres, you'd have 60 of them on with.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that's a lot of capital to tie up in individual drive units. Where, like, compared to a tractor, like I have a tractor, I got a PTO, now I have all this other shit I can buy and use my PTO to drive it, right? Like, I want a wood chipper. Well, I can buy just the wood chipper, hook my PTO up it, and now I've got a wood chipper, and it costs me a lot less than buying one with its own engine is kind of where I'm going with that.
Yeah, and you're 100% right, and that's honestly, like, if stock cropper as a system in the field, you know, because we did set it up originally with barns that had their own independent drive system on, I think what it would come down to is, I think you're 100% right, we would not create a tractor to drive around from point to point, because in driving down the lanes to power the thing, they would be driving down the pasture as well. So what you would do is you would use a basically a centralized winching system.
Okay.
Where you could have winches that come down each lane off of a central large electric drive, and you would just have things, you know, you could have the whole lineup across the field being pulled by one big winch motor.
Something similar to like the irrigation systems that work that way, where it wouldn't be the same at all, but I'm trying to get my head around it from an engineering speaking. I've seen pivot irrigation, but I've also seen this basically looks like a big long track and it just moves across the field in some situations. It wouldn't be able to work exactly like that, but something kind of like that.
The nice thing with the winch versus anything that drives itself is that when it rains and you lose traction,
it doesn't matter.
The winch just wins. And
it doesn't care.
Yeah, and that's why I think if you were going to do this at scaled level, that's the approach that I would take, because I've been stuck too many times with tires and drives. You know, when you get a 4-inch rain or something like that. And so, but a winch doesn't work great like in a backyard, because now you have a cable and you can trip over it or some, you know, like, and you have to move it all the time. And
But
in a field setting, it could be a really, really great option, especially on the land.
That does too. Because the other side of this, now I'm doing the math of, but what if each row in between my row crop had, you know, pastured pork on one side of it and pastured poultry on the other, or any combination I can come up with? And what does that look like in gross revenue annually versus just growing corn or beans? And the answer is it's a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's. And it's a market that is as even if you're not doing a premium direct to consumer product, it is a commodity product if you had to fall back to it. Like, that farmer knows at the end of the season, I can sell this many pigs for this much money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's not like you're going to get stuck with them.
Right. Yeah. No, it, yeah. The thing that really makes it unique is, or what made the original Cluster Cluck unique, is the fact that you could stack four different enterprises on one chassis. And and when you do that, and the grazing area that we needed, we were generating about $15,000 an acre of USDA pasture raised protein, versus like what I'm going to raise this year growing corn, which is going to be, you know, if I'm lucky, maybe $900 an acre. So,
and that's really good, by the way. That's high. I've heard numbers in the 300 to 600 a lot.
Yeah, but for Iowa, like, you know, a lot of our cost of production for a lot of people this year is $1,000 an acre. So
you're talking gross revenue. All right.
Yeah. So yeah, no, farming is not a profitable thing in 2026. So if you're growing corn and beans right now, so
yeah,
it's. Especially with what's going on with Iran and the fertilizer situation and diesel fuel. I mean, those are all things that really impact us here. And that's also why it's nice to have animals making your nutrients instead of waiting on the Strait of Hormuz for your urea to come through. So.
Yeah. I mean, and one thing I guess we should talk about, the new cluster clug, that's going to be solar?
Yeah.
Is that what I read?
Solar powered, yeah.
So once it's set up, there's no real input cost at that point.
No. No, it just runs and works. And we've been testing it over the course of the winter at our facility in central Illinois, where it's being developed right now. And yeah, it's been working great outside of when the snow falls. But most people aren't running those things in the wintertime anyway. So.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it should require a very limited amount of like panels and battery, because it's not like it's running all day long. Talk a little bit about the logistics of it. Is it like a once a day move, or can you set it to move multiple times? Like, what kind of flexibility you have on movement there?
It's totally flexible. Okay. So it's based off of how many animals or what's your situation. Is it on a pasture or is it on a lawn? If you have it on a lawn, you're going to want to move it more.
Yeah.
So that you don't have, you know, chickens start to try to make a wallow or a dust wallow or, you know, pecking the grass down too much, where it's scalping things. And so, you know, 2 to 3 times a day, like, especially with, you know, I would say with meat birds, especially with the amount that they can crap is probably about right. And, and then it doesn't take a ton of, it doesn't take a ton of land for that. I think I did the math. If you had a 1/4 acre of lawn, you know, this thing would, come back to the same spot. I think it was like once every 30 or 35 days.
Okay.
So,
okay. I guess my point on the power draw though was like, let's say whatever I'm moving is 10 foot long.
Yeah.
So that one move is 10 feet.
Yeah.
If it's going twice a day, I'm only asking it to move the thing 20 feet a day.
Yeah. So,
and then I got a panel that's sucking up sun all day long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one well-charged battery could do that for probably a week, even if it wasn't being charged back up. So it becomes pretty much perpetual at that point.
Right. Yeah. So we have right now, it's like a 20 watt, you know, a pretty small, it's not much. Yeah.
A deer feeder solar panel, right?
Yeah. It's not, it's hardly anything that's mounted on the top for size. And then we've got just a regular 12 volt battery. You know, that was one thing I should say too, is a lot of people say, well, what happens if something breaks? If this is electric, like, what do I do then? Everything has been designed with a very easy workaround. So like, if our screw jack that's electric breaks, there's a manual deal on the top of the jack that you can spin the jack if you have to manually. If the drive motors would break, or if you want to freewheel it and move it quickly across the property, like if, say, from one side of the farm to the other, we've got, if you're familiar with garden tillers, there's a quick disconnect on the drive shaft where you can just pop that out and now the thing can freewheel. You can take the steering lever down. That becomes a hitch for your UTV. You can hook it up to your UTV, move it anywhere you want on the farm. Or say if you get it stuck for some reason and you get a big rain and it spins out, which that's possible, you've got an easy option to get yourself out of that hole. So we've really thought hard about everything we could do, everything that could go wrong. We wanted to have a design allowable to allow people to pivot and not have a bad day. So
I know you're still doing some work on it and all, but is there like, do you have a weight on the drive, like what it's going to weigh? What is that product going to weigh?
Yeah, I think it's going to be probably somewhere between 65 to 75 pounds when it's all told. Yep.
Very, very shippable then. That is a huge upgrade in your ability to move a product to a customer. I mean, I buy shit that's that heavier all the time. People buy 50-pound bags of dog food on Amazon every day.
Right.
So we have the infrastructure and the cost accessibility of moving something that size to the customer just about anywhere in the country. And I would definitely say, like, this is probably a product most people with some land that want to do protein can use, but if you have fairly decent size long runs, it's kind of ideal at that point. Like, you know, I think of like my east pasture, which is about a 1 acre field. And I would probably run it in the narrow dimensions, just the way I have things laid out over there. But, you know, I could end up having to move it to a next laneway once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I can go 7 days hands off.
Yep.
And this thing's just going to raise food for me and improve my pasture.
Right.
Without having to do much of anything, keep the feeders and the waterers full. And I can, you know, if you can move 600 pounds with a little bit of my own automation added to it and how I design my box for the drive to plug into it, I can probably make it where I don't have to worry about adding food or water for that week. So once a week, I'm topping up food and water and I'm moving this thing over one way on the narrow dimension and sending it back the other direction. That is a very compelling thing, and it makes that $2,500 target price a lot more attractive. What would someone charge you to come to your house twice a day and do all this for you?
Right.
And I think when we get into the world of automation, that's where people need to think a little more like a business owner and operator than the typical consumer. Like, there is a value to labor, and there is a value to the fact that automation tends to, it does fail at times, like you said, but it tends to fail less than human labor. Like right. That's like, it's weird. Like people get in this mindset, like, well, I'm going to do a technological solution. And well, what happens if it fails? What do you do when it fails now?
Right.
Right. And the kid you hired that you thought was reliable, it doesn't show up for 3 days and you didn't know it while you were on vacation.
Right.
I mean, I think there's a lot of value in that.
Well, I just did the quick math here. Like, so say you have 6 months out of the year, you're raising your own protein or moving it around in one form or fashion. If you, you know, say that, you know, and you want need to move it 3 times a day, that's 30 minutes a day. You divide that over the cost of the $2,500 price point on the high end there. That's $27 an hour is essentially what, you know, the cost is in 1 year.
For one year.
So, yeah.
So then just 2 years, you cut that in half, and 4 years, cut that in half again.
Yeah.
And now you're paying minimum wage.
Right.
For somebody that doesn't get tired, doesn't bitch, doesn't complain, doesn't ask for a raise.
Exactly. Yeah.
So. You put that shit in your marketing. we don't have any questions today, unless I missed them or something. So if anybody's got any questions for Zach or me, now would be the time. Go ahead and throw them in the chat there. Put the word question in all caps before you do. I had one question, but it was for me, but I'm going to go ahead and answer it anyway real quick because this is something that comes in once in a while. Craig said, didn't realize you're still at it. You ever going to bring back the forum? No, I'm not. The forum has been gone since I think about 2016. What we noticed with our discussion forum was that everybody gravitated to their social media place of choice. They created groups and communities and sub-communities around what we do, and that just kind of spread everybody out. And the old-school bulletin board-style forum, you know, was getting 10 posts a week, and it required an extensive amount of manpower to protect it from, you know, spammers and link farmers and stuff like that and doing the upgrades on it plus the additional hosting requirements and all. So our forum exists as an archive. So there is 100,000 posts. That's not responses and all. It's just original threads there, and it's you can get to it from our site, and it's just an archive of knowledge for people. But it doesn't look like we have any other questions right now anyway. So, Zach, you want to tell people how they can learn more about this and stay in touch with you?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Yeah. So, best way to, you know, stay in touch or to follow us is you know, either through on X, my X account, which is at Zebulous Prime or at Stockropper. We have two different handles there. And if you're interested in joining our reservation list or you want to put a paid deposit down, we will have a very limited run of these. Our first production run will be in 2027. So for delivery next spring, essentially for the Cluster Cluck Drive. And so if this is something that you like the sound of, go to thestockropper.com. And we've got a really slick and easy way for you to get in via Stripe and make a deposit payment that secures your spot in line for that that production run. And then we also have the same thing for the Pico, which will be the plan is if everything goes well to be delivered in 2028 for those that are interested in that product as well. And if you want to go back and see, yeah, there's a picture of the website right there. If you want to go back and see our previous work, you can go to our YouTube page or YouTube channel, The Stockropper, and we've got videos that go back all the way to 2020 that if you're listening to this and you want to see what these things actually look like, YouTube is probably the best place to go. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram and all the socials with The Stockropper with other things. But yeah, the website, YouTube, X, probably the best place to follow me. So.
Awesome. And for people that were watching the video there, I pulled up the page and for everybody, I'll just say the deposit on this to reserve one for next year is only $100. So if you want one, I used to say when I was in sales, my job is to get a purchase order from the company. It's their job to deliver it. But I used to tell my customers when something new was coming out, if you want yours, you need a purchase order now, right? Like, let's go, like, let's lock this up because there's a line. And that's how you get – until then, you're looking at the line. You're not in the line. So if y'all are interested in getting one of these when they come out, get on over there and make your deposit. If you were listening to Zach talk about the website, all the social media sites, because they're on X, Facebook, Insta, YouTube, and TikTok, I will have all of that in the audio side notes. So that's on my website, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Every episode, once we get done with the live that we're doing right now, I do an audio-only version of it over there. I embed the video so you can get that. But I also include all of the stuff for the guest, plus all the other stuff that I talk about. So you can find all of that there. If you're watching the video and go, what's that? What are, just go down in the video notes, and the, like first thing, we'll give you a link that'll go over to this episode on the auto side. And if you click it while we're still live, it's not going to work because we're not done yet. It's like the guy earlier, he was asking, how can he watch it in 1.5 speed? You can't do that with something that's running live. It doesn't work that way. We don't have that sort of control over time yet. At least I don't think we do. Anyway, Zach, I appreciate you being with us today. You got any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, this has been awesome. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and happy to get in front of your audience again and look forward to connecting with folks in the future. So
I'm sure we'll send you a wave of people like we did last time, and it's exciting that we are pretty close to being able to actually get our hands on these things and get them deployed on our own property. Again, man, thanks for tuning in with us today, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, real quick before I go, I want to remind you guys that one of the ways you can help support my work and the stuff that we do here to bring this show to you 5 days a week is a really simple, painless thing. And that is you can just start your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. I don't have any sort of star drive chicken tractor for you today. I got something way more simple than that, but it is a great product, and it is these carbon steel skillets from a company called Merton and Stork. It's M-E-R-T-E-N, Merton and Stork. These are made in Germany. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know I am a huge fan of cooking with carbon steel. I find a lot of advantage to it over cast iron because it heats up quicker, because it's thinner, it's lighter weight. It pretty much does everything cast iron does great, except it doesn't hold heat as long. So that's kind of what I'll use cast iron for. But like searing off a steak or something like that, day-to-day cooking, I'm all in on carbon steel. And I've loved the Lodge brand for a very long time because it's not that they made the best pan. They made a really great pan for a very affordable price, like a 12-inch skillet for like $50. And it's a skillet that you know your grandkids could use someday after you're dead. Well, someone reached out to me from Merton and Stork. I've never been able to find them again, but I'm like, I'll give the brand a shot. And I got one of these. It's like buying a $200 pan for $50 is the way I would describe it. Germans, they have their engineering down. Dead flat bottom, absolutely smooth finish, higher edges than the Lodge, better angle, deeper, better handle, better, everything is better. The price, it's the same. I'm not going to say it's more or less. Any given day, the Lodge pan might be $49 and this one's $53. And this one might be $49 in 2 weeks and the Lodge pan is $50. It bounces around with commodity pricing. But it's about the same price. And it's at least three times better. That's what we call price-to-value ratio. I really recommend that if you enjoy cooking at all, get some of these, start using them, start trying them. And you probably won't use anything else. I'm not going to say I threw away my Lodge pans. They just don't get used very much anymore. Even the ones that have been around a long time and have beautiful seasoning on them, because this is just a better piece of equipment. That's what we always try to bring you. Also, remember, you can always become a member of the Member Support Brigade. You do that, you get discounts on stuff. You're probably buying anyway, so your membership will pay for itself. And we just brought on a new discount vendor and sponsor, thecaseplace.com. These guys are awesome. I mean, you're talking about brands like Pelican for 50 to 80% off. Plus, if you're an MSB member, you get a discount. That's just one reason to become a discount vendor. We have stuff from cannabis products, stuff for your garden, your homesteading, your tactical stuff. We have over 70 companies that do discounts. If you become a member, it's $50 a year. Most of our sponsors do discounts. Start 9 today. They do a discount for you that'll pay for your membership a couple years over if you're going to get a Start 9. Above phone. You get a above phone for $75 off. That's a year and a half of membership. I've only named like not even a full handful of the supporters that you get discounts from if you become a member. So if you like what we do and you want to make sure we're always here, please consider becoming a member. Remember, you can always get my books and all, but I'm going to tell you, don't buy my book, Laws of Life. Why? Second edition will be out soon. That's going to Laura today. I just got back Laws of Life book 2. And I am, we should have both of those released in the next month and a half to 2 months. So that's another way to support us. And you can learn more about all that at jackslaws.com. Take care, guys. Have a great day. And I will catch you tomorrow with Expert Counsel Q&A show. For those new to the show, that will not be on YouTube. It is not a live show. It is where our experts answer your questions. And so we'll have that show for you tomorrow. And then Friday, I take off. So I'll see you again on Monday. Take care. That's when we'll be back with our next live stream. Run you around.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.